Rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. This is the first out of four that we'll be discussing Mr. Springsteen this month, because you may think it's September, but it's actually Springstember. So we will be celebrating Bruce all month long, even at the expense of wonderful artists like Joe Perry, who also has a birthday this month. But as y'all know, I could discuss Bruce as a show in of itself, but that's not fair to all my other interests in music, so I'm gonna focus on him all month long. To dig into it today, to set the mood for the whole month, I'm going to discuss Bruce's importance, especially through the vehicle of other artists who have mentioned Bruce in their songs, be it his lyrics or Springsteen's name itself. And you would be surprised how many there are. There are two lists from NewJerseyArts.com that each have 20 songs apiece, so there's a total 40. And they didn't have the three songs that I knew. So that makes at least 43 songs that mention Bruce Springsteen. And there may be more, because I came up with three that they didn't have. They didn't have Out of My Mind by The Killers, and they didn't have the two songs by Aaron Watson off of his latest album. I can forgive them, the Aaron Watson ones, but I was like, Wonderful, Wonderful by The Killers has been out for a few years now. Y'all should have added that one in. So, to start things off, if you know any Bruce songs that I don't mention in this song, in this ramble, drop them in a comment here, Instagram, Facebook, whatever, and let me know. Because I would love to know, and I'll add them to my playlist I have on Spotify of songs that name drop Bruce by lyric or by name. So, that's the topic, and hang in there because it's, you're gonna want to stick around. There are so many different artists from so many different walks of life or, you know, musical genres. You've got everybody from Lana Del Rey to Bowling for Soup, from Aaron Watson to the Traveling Wilburys. It's a big spectrum of artists who are discussing Bruce here. So, I mean, and geographically, it's a huge, you've got everybody from people from his own state of Jersey, which you would expect because Bruce is kind of the patron saint of New Jersey. All the way over to the other coast with Lifehouse, who is from California. You've got not just American artists, but you've got Canadian artists, British artists, French-Canadian artists. The vastness of his influence is huge. So, you're gonna want to stick around and find out all about all these artists from all these different genres. You know, be it folk, hip-hop, rock, country, indie, they're all over the place, and they're all, some of these, like, I just picked the songs that I listened to that I liked. There's more off of those New Jersey Arts lists that I did not add, either because they didn't fit my, you know, narrative, or I just didn't like the song. So these are just the ones I like, and I've got over 20 of them, so stick around, enjoy. One of the first ones I want to discuss is by country artist Aaron Watson, who I'm going to go see today. Well, today being when this releases on Sunday, at the Central Texas State Fair. And his song off of his album called American Soul, the song American Soul, very much sort of captures a lot of what we love about Bruce. So, you know, he is a good representation of the American soul. Like, the song is obviously a country song, and so there's, you know, it's posed in more country music traditional ways, but a lot of what Aaron Watson is discussing in this song is either themes that Bruce has discussed at times, or that overall vibe that Bruce inspires in you at times. So, American Soul, I felt, was a good song to kick off this conversation with, because it name drops Born in the USA. It's a lyric name drop, not a name drop. There's another song off of that album called Stay that name drops Springsteen by name, so it's very clear that Bruce is a big influence on Aaron Watson, which is awesome. I love it, because Aaron, in previous songs on previous albums, has name-dropped Bowie and some other rock and roll artists who you wouldn't expect a Red Dirt Country artist to, you know, have been influenced by, but clearly he was. So anyways, American Soul kicks this off, and then you've got artists like Bowling for Soup and Rodney Atkins, who Bowling for Soup in 1985 and Rodney Atkins in It's America mention Bruce as an icon of an era or of the country itself. Like, 1985 by Bowling for Soup is about this girl who didn't get to live her dreams in the 80s and is now a housewife, and her yellow SUV is now the enemy, which is one of my favorite lines. I grew up listening to Bowling for Soup. They were one of my big... I love them as a teenager. Their song Come Back to Texas was great. They are actually from Texas, so that's, you know, fun. Yeehaw. But Rodney Atkins in It's America uses Springsteen as, like, an image, you know, because he's like, you know, it's a high school prom, it's a Springsteen song, you know, this, you know, It's America. Because Bruce is very much woven into our national fabric. He's part of that tapestry of America. You couldn't, you know, paint a picture of America that includes the 20th century and not reasonably include Bruce. So he's, you know, especially when you discuss the 80s, he's one of the biggest icons of that era. So, and then that wasn't even, you know, I mean, you could argue it's his best era. It's his best known era. What his best era is up for debate. It's Darkness on the Edge of Town. My opinion. Just my opinion. And I'm willing to admit that everybody's is different and equally, you know, valuable. But I really like Darkness on the Edge of Town. And the 9,000 outtakes from said album. But, other artists use him as a, to capture a mood. Lifehouse's song, Hurt This Way, uses images not just that directly mention Springsteen, but allude to his songs, because the setting is very similar to Thunder Road, because there's a girl on a porch, but she's listening to a Springsteen song in this case. You know, they've upped it to the next generation, where, you know, she's not listening to Roy Orbison anymore, she's listening to her own generation's version of Roy Orbison, which would be Bruce Springsteen. And then you've got Gaslight Anthem does a song called Meet Me by the River's Edge, which is their big refrain is No Surrender, My Bobby Jean, and uses him to fit, like, the urgency of wanting to get out that Bruce's songs can sometimes have. And so it fits a mood. Those two songs, Hurt This Way by Lifehouse and Meet Me by the River's Edge, fit a certain kind of mood. Gaslight Anthem, incidentally, is from New Jersey, so it's understandable why they would be discussing Bruce. Also, speaking of Jersey, do please admire my shirt. The other Jersey boy. For those of you watching on podcasts, I have a Bon Jovi shirt on, or listening to on podcast, rather. I have a Bon Jovi shirt on that my mom found me at a thrift store and made my day. Anyways. And then, sometimes Bruce's songs are used to conjure a nostalgia of a certain mood or time in someone's life. Like, Stay by Aaron Watson does that, and probably the most famous song, the name drop Bruce, Springsteen by Eric Church, does it a lot. Like, he's using Springsteen as a soundtrack to the whole, like, high school romance he had, and alludes to Springsteen both in lyric and by name. And it's, like, it's very much a Springsteen-based song, alluding to O on Fire, both about singing about it, and then he sort of replicates the O-O-O part, in his own take, Eric Church does. You know, with the nostalgia, it's the soundtrack to, you know, the high school romance that, you know, eventually played out. And so, you know, he's used that way. Lady A, formerly known as Lady Antebellum, uses Bruce in their song Stars Tonight as a image of American youth and masculinity. Because, you know, the boys in their Pearl Snap shirts, like Bruce Springsteen, I think is the line. Not that I can ever recall seeing Bruce in a Pearl Snap shirt. Just saying. That's sort of a country cowboy thing. He may have worn one from time to time, but pretty sure that good old plaid on the cover of The River had no Pearl Snaps. But for whatever reason, they chose that. I mean, I definitely agree with the vibe, because to me, when you look at, like, the cover of Darkness on the Edge of Town and The River, he looks like, well, my friends and I refer to the look as, like, America's boyfriend. He looks like the American male condensed and, like, you know, it's like, you know, those things that they do where they feed a computer a bunch of, like, they've done it with, like, Hallmark movies, scripts, and then the computer, you know, the robot, like, regurgitates out a plot. It's like if you fed every idea of American masculinity in positive senses, just for context, into a computer and had to have it spit out an image, it would spit out the Darkness on the Edge of Town cover. Just saying. That is, like, a very vivid, it looks like somebody, you know, some muscle car driving, all-American dude. It's like I covered when I, the incident that sparked this whole desire to take my love for rock public was me on E Street Nation talking to Dave Marsh about how the line "Slick Chrome American Prince" in Dustland Fairy Tale by The Killers just perfectly summed up Bruce's vibe and look in that late 70s to The River era of Bruce. So Darkness to the and The River. And I mean, that's when Dave Marsh said, "Are you sure you're not a rock critic?" And it, because of that remark, here I am today sharing my love of rock and roll with you. So I feel given that comment was validated by Dave Marsh, I'm not too far off the mark with thinking that Slick Chrome American Prince and the general idea of Bruce as an image of American masculinity, especially in a youthful sense, I don't think I'm too far off the mark. If I am, at least I'm in good company, because Dave freaking Marsh thought I had something to say. Yeah, for those of you who didn't know the backstory, that's how I got to be doing this. I had been doing this just for my friends, and then when somebody like Dave Marsh thinks I have something to say, it was a decent impetus and kickstart to share my thoughts with y'all, which is what I'm doing now. So, moving on. Sometimes Bruce isn't always covered positively. Weirdly enough, it seems to be his friends who roast him the most. Like, because I'm not saying it's totally negative, but I'm not saying it's totally positive either, because John Mellencamp, who is doing a collaboration with Bruce Springsteen on his new album, Mellencamp's new album, not Bruce's, kind of throws some shade at Bruce in the song, The Kid Inside. At least it seems to be. It's sort of like, you know, I can't say it as bad as Mr. Springsteen or something like that. And I'm like, are you inferring Bruce phrases things badly, Mr. Mellencamp? Because I have words for you. But no, I'm sure it's not meant seriously or anything, otherwise they wouldn't be collaborating now, you know, 10, 15, 20 years after that song came out. It's probably more like 30 or 40 years after that song came out. We don't want to talk about it. 1980 still feels like it was 20, maybe 30 years ago. It's the problem of being a millennial. You're like, I just count back from 2000. What? 2020 isn't a real year. 2021 definitely isn't a real year. Side note. But, so, clearly it wasn't meant in any serious harm, but it didn't sound totally flattering either. Same way with Bruce's other friend, Warren Zevon, who throws shade not at just at Bruce, but at Bruce and Patty, as well as Billy Joel and Christie Brinkley, in his song The Indifference of Heaven, where it seems like he's sort of, you know, the line is, Billy and Christie don't live around here, Patty and Bruce don't live around here. So it sort of seems like it's like he's trying to say that they're out of touch because they're now, you know, fancy and rich and on their mansion on the hill rather than down in the streets with the average day American. So, I don't know. Warren, sadly, is no longer with us to ask him to elaborate on that. But it clearly doesn't seem to have affected him and Bruce's friendship, because Bruce did give him Jamie Needs a Shooter to record, which, fun fact, if you didn't know, that song, even though it just came out on Letter to You, with Bruce doing it, has been around since 71, 72, 73. Very, very early Bruce. It's an extremely early Bruce song that just took 50 years to come to light on a official release. So, but in the interim between him writing it and him releasing it on Letter to You, Warren Zevon did a version of it. Because he really liked the line. He thought it was an interesting line, which it is an intriguing line. It grabs your attention. Janie needs a shooter. You're like, what does this mean? But, so, yeah. And Warren Zevon also kind of throws some shade at Better Days by Bruce, which he's not alone in this. And I'm like, y'all leave Bruce alone about the relationship albums, okay? Like, I get that they're not the best. Like, they're not the worst either. I'm just saying, you know, if you're introducing somebody to Bruce, you're probably not going to start out with Tunnel of Love, Human Touch, or Lucky Town. But they're definitely worth listening to. Like, I will rather listen to Lucky Town than I would Devils and Dust. And I'm not saying Devils and Dust is a bad album. I'm just saying I would rather listen to Lucky Town. It's not a bad album, people. Neither is Human Touch, okay? It's not as good as Lucky Town, but it's not bad. If people want to hate on it, like the band The Hesh Incorporated, who's from, like, New York, their song Bruce starts out really positive, praising it. It's actually where I got the line, Crown Prince of Rock and Roll from. And then they just, by the end of the song, they're ragging on Bruce. Especially about, you know, it mentions the three albums and then in a negative context, and I can only assume it means the three relationship albums of Tunnel of Love, Human Touch, and Lucky Town. I'm like, they're not that bad. Leave Bruce alone, you meanies! Also, the English rock band Deaf Havana, in their song 22, takes a milder pot shot at Better Days. I'm like, is everybody... What? Let Bruce be happy, damn it! It's like Bruce talks about, I think, when he was being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, his acceptance speech. He's like, wrote songs about being happy in the 90s, and nobody liked that, so I gotta go back to being sad. Something along those lines. And I'm like, Bruce is happy in starting a family. Y'all leave him alone. They're good songs, okay? They're not the best, but they're certainly not the worst either. They're just solid, you know, good songs. They're not Born in the USA 0.2. And I'm thankful for that. I'd rather have Bruce doing what Bruce wants to do than trying to recreate his, you know, previous success. And I get that in the era, that confused people. But in retrospect, I think everybody should be understanding of that now. By now, y'all should understand. Anyways, moving on from that, before maybe I need to do a whole ramble just in defense of the relationship album Trinity. May have to do that at some point. And then the positives do outweigh the negatives when it comes to people covering Bruce, because those are the only three songs that really have a negative context in any stretch of the imagination, or should I say four songs. But English songwriter Richard Davies' song Springsteen is nothing but praise. It is compliments to Bruce's impact on this guy's life. I mean, he's British and he's saying, he makes me wish I was born in the USA, and name drops a bunch of Bruce songs, and it's just lovely. Even the album cover is sort of a imitation of the photo that Bruce used on the cover of Greatest Hits. So, it's a very pleasant, enjoyable, kind of folk ditty, and I enjoy it. It's one of my favorite of these songs that I discovered when I went on this quest to find Bruce songs, or rather, songs about Bruce. It gets really confusing when you try to Google songs about Bruce Springsteen, because most of them, the lists, want to come up with top 100 Bruce Springsteen songs, and I'm like, it's not what I asked for, but Google doesn't understand nuance. But anyways, and then back to Texas, a good old boy from Houston, Rich O'Toole's song Springsteen Gold is a lovely, you know, positive, glowing tribute to Bruce's music and influence. Same way with the Texan Blue Edmondson's song Our World Now. It actually uses Bruce's song writing and lyrics kind of as a vehicle for a getaway, which is totally in the grain of Bruce, because even though it's a country song, he's taking shots at country music and being like, you know, I don't want the small town and the football, I don't care about the football team, and the, a lot of common topics of country music songs. And he's referencing Bruce lyrics in the context of, you know, escaping. So it's a good song. And it's not like, it's a good type of country. Like, it's not totally obnoxiously country. It's kind of a mellow, toned down country, but still has that red dirt element to it too. So I love it, because I'm pretty sure, like, I've listened to a lot of songs, but I'm pretty sure that one has a really nice fiddle part to it. So that's always good, because you have to have one of those if you want to play in Texas. Aaron Watson does, and I'm excited. I am excited for the concert this Sunday. And then traveling out of my home state and into international waters, you get the French artist Norma, who sings about Bruce in the context of both background music and, like, Lady A, an image for, like, masculinity. Because she's... Badlands is playing in the background is sort of the refrain of the song. But she's also covering, in one of the lyrics, she's like, you know, she's talking about the guy that she's with, and she's like, he ain't no James Dean. But when that comes back up, that refrain comes back up around again, it's like, he ain't no Springsteen. So he's being used as a yardstick for whether her man measures up or not, which clearly he don't. If he ain't James Dean, he ain't Bruce Springsteen, maybe you need to reconsider your life, girl. No. Those are icons, not actual people. I mean, they are actual people, but the image is what she's comparing. But anyways, Bruce as an image does come up quite often, both, like I said, as for an era, or for the whole country, or for masculinity, in this case, and in the Lady A case, you know, sort of youth and masculinity and youth, you know, both separately and together, he gets used as a an image for that. And like I said, I mean, I associate him that way with Slick Chrome American Prince and, you know, America's Boyfriend is sort of what the vibes that come off in that era. And then moving on from France to England, you get Ian Hunter. If you don't recognize the name, he's from Mott the Hoople. So, All the Young Dudes. One of the young dudes from All the Young Dudes did a song called Listen to the 8-Track, which, in the context of Bruce songs being used as mood music in somebody else's song, like Norma's Badlands that I just discussed, I really enjoy this one because... The song almost sounds like, in the beginning, like it's talking about Billy Joel, because it's like, you know, he's talking about New York, and I come from the island. It feels like a sort of reinterpretation of Captain Jack. But then by the second half of the song, this guy's in his car, and he's with his date, and he's got the double album, so he's got The River, because that's the only Bruce Springsteen double album that I know of. Unless maybe it came off differently on 8-Track. But anyway, so, assumedly he's listening to The River, and, you know, he's putting the moves on his girl, and he, turns down the music, and she's just, you know, she just wants to cuddle up and asks him to turn the 8-Track back up. And, you know, I'm like, girl's got her priorities straight. Rock and roll, and then boys. Unless the boys play rock and roll. And then it's still rock and roll, and then boys. So yeah, crank up The River. Ignore the canoodling. Cuddle up and rock out rather than rock the car. I totally agree with her choices. But yeah, so that's one of the funnest ones where people are using Bruce songs as a mood in their songs. And I mean, and Ian Hunter's kind of an underground legend, sort of. You know, not everybody knows Mott the Hoople. But he is a name that you know if you know about them and other obscure British, you know, influential bands that didn't necessarily have international success. So, Mott the Hoople, Free, T-Rex, those type bands. But yes, moving on from England to Canada, we have a hip-hop artist that are called Brand 3000. And their song, like, it sets a Springsteen-type mood in a hip-hop sense. It's got this very sort of dreamy kind of, you know, it's not like heavy dance club hip-hop. It's got a dreamy kind of vibe, and it's talking about, you know, motorbikes and bomber jackets, so you're already getting the Springsteen vibes. And then it launches into a rap about halfway through, which name drops a whole bunch of Springsteen songs. You know, it's talking about Born to Run and Jersey Girl, and she's from a mansion on the hill, and I think she's got a pink Cadillac too. Like, a lot of Bruce Springsteen songs referenced in that rap. And that song is called Speed. Now, jumping from Canada to a band that has one or two British members and several American members, and consists of people who influenced Bruce more than his own peers, the Traveling Wilburys, who their song, Tweeter and the Monkey Man, does the same thing that Brand Van 3000 song, Speed, does, which is name drop a whole bunch of Bruce songs. Tweeter and the Monkey Man mentions Jersey Girl, mentions Highway Patrolman, it mentions a lot of songs. Put it that way. Like, the whole narrative is built up around Bruce song lyrics. And I mean, it's astonishing when you put it in the context of this band has a Beatle in it. It has Bob Dylan in it. It has Tom Petty in it. And it has Jeff Lynne from Electric Light Orchestra. And probably most intrinsically related to Bruce Springsteen, it has Roy Orbison in it. Granted, Roy Orbison did not sing on this track, but I mean, Roy Orbison is name-dropped in Thunder Road, who's a huge influence on Bruce. Not that Dylan wasn't. I mean, Dylan was such an influence on Bruce that he had to sort of fight the whole next Dylan, you know, tagline that people wanted to hang on him. And he's like, no, don't curse me like that. There is actually a song, which I forgot to write down, that mentions, I think it's by, can't remember the artist. I will think about it in a minute and kick myself. But it's about being the new Bob Dylan's, is what the song is about. And they reference that. I mean, it was this dude and, you know, some other artists that were supposed to be the new Bob Dylan's, and, you know, whether or not they made it or not is another question. But so that was another song that mentioned Bruce, one that didn't even make my 24 or so songs that I've got written down here. But yeah, so the Traveling Wilburys, made up of living legends of the time, found it necessary to pay homage to the Boss. And while the song is attributed to all the band, it's considered to probably have been mostly written by Harrison and Dylan. You know, put that in context. A Beatle and Bob Dylan wrote a song about Bruce. That's how important he is. And so, circling back around to that line about from the Hetch Incorporated song, Bruce, about the Crown Prince of Rock and Roll. The reason why I find that line so perfect for this is because while nobody, not even the Beatles, and there was four of them, could ever equal Elvis Presley, Bruce is the heir apparent. Because, I mean, a crown prince in the sense of monarchy is the heir to the king. So usually the king's oldest son, or his oldest, you know, nearest nephew, if he doesn't have any children of his own. That's Bruce. That's what Bruce is to Elvis. Obviously, the king never dies. Elvis is with us and will be so long as recorded music exists. But Bruce is his heir. He captures so much, maybe not in the same way, and to the same extent, but he captures so much of what Elvis did. The universalism. I mean, Aerosmith was playing in Germany, I'm pretty sure, when Elvis Presley died, and when they announced it to the audience. Grown men in their 40s, working men, burst into tears. My mom worked with a lady in her office. Not a musician or anything. Crying at her desk the day Elvis died. So, the universal appeal. And in a, one of the things that had me drawing this parallel is I'm like, if Elvis is James Dean, like the equivalent, the legend that will never quite be matched and definitely never surpassed, then Bruce Springsteen is Marlon Brando. Longer lived, did a bit of more of a variety of things, and just a small tier down from. I mean, as iconic as every picture of James Dean practically is, Marlon Brando leaned over the motorcycle is pretty iconic. So, equivalent with musicians is Elvis and Bruce Springsteen. And I don't think, like, I'm willing to debate this, but I feel like I have enough evidence that I can say this with confidence. Just the number of songs written in reference to Bruce says something for his legendary status. The rock, there's so many songs, or well, not so many, but a good, what would that be, about a fifth of the songs that I've written down for this mention Elvis and Bruce together in the same song. Like, Rock and Roll Call, you know, was like, Elvis is the king and Springsteen's the boss. Of course, Springsteen is more than the boss. He is the crown prince. He is the heir apparent. He captured some of those things that Elvis did so well, like stage presence and, you know, the energy in his performance. Whereas, you know, and he's younger, like a crown prince would be younger than the king, obviously, as his heir. Bruce, even at 60 at the Super Bowl, has this youthful mentality to him, you know, doing knee slides, that's way more wild and crazy and young than Elvis, who by all means is an icon of teenhood in his era. But Elvis is a little bit more dignified, you know, like a king would be compared to a prince. And so, you know, that it all comes together, and then you've got other songs like Out of My Mind by The Killers. Puts Elvis and Bruce back to back, because it mentions, you know, we'll storm the gates of Graceland, and then back to back with Springsteen, and then it throws in a Beatles reference with McCartney there too. Which, I mean, those three are like the trinity of rock and roll. Bruce sort of married the Beatles to Elvis in his own way, as in he was the front man like Elvis was, but he also was in a band, you know, like the Beatles were a band. He sort of brought the two together where you could be a solo artist but also a band artist at the same time, and that joyous, jubilant rock and roll that he does, you know, it's like Lil Steven was just discussing in the thing that he did on Varsity Tutors about how the Beatles brought joy. Bruce brings joy. He also brings the conviction that Elvis has in his singing. Obviously, they're very different vocalists, and I am not saying that they have the same quality of voice, or even, you know, or even remotely the same style, but both of them, when they sing something, you believe it. You know, whether it's Elvis in the Ghetto, which incidentally was offered to Sammy Davis Jr., and he turned it down because he's like, I've never lived that life. I've never been that poor. But Elvis Presley has. Go give it to Elvis. Which is saying something from a black Jewish man, saying that In the Ghetto should be sung by a white Southern boy. Because he's like, I've never been that poor. I may be a minority, but I've never been dirt poor. Elvis has been dirt poor. Give it to him. But anyway, so like, just the impact and the youthful vigor that Bruce has. Like I said, like in a prince compared to a king. Prince is gonna be more wild and out there and youthful and jubilant than a more dignified king. I mean, sensational and teenish as the hip wiggling of Elvis Presley was at the time, Elvis was not running from one side of the stage to the other, jumping up on top of the amplifier, doing knee slides crotch first into a camera at the Super Bowl on accident because he couldn't break himself. You know, that youthful energy that Bruce has carried with him even to this day in his concerts. You know, it's the prince and the king. And Bruce is the image of rock and roll for a whole generation. It's like Montgomery Gentry in their song Hell Yeah. It's the girl who wants to hear rock and roll is asking for Bruce. And, you know, they already lay the groundwork of what generation she's from and, you know, what his music takes her back to. And so while the baby boomers had Elvis Presley and the Beatles, the next generation had Bruce Springsteen. I mean, born in the USA, ruled the 80s. And The River had Hungry Heart and a couple other, you know, hit songs on it. So, I mean, Bruce was rock and roll. He was about the only true rock and roll sounding act out there, you know, that was still building on that older sound of rock and roll. Like, I mean, punk had some definite rock and roll elements, obviously. Elvis Costello, the Ramones. But Bruce was... rock and roll was the only real word you could tag on it. You couldn't tag punk on him. Heartland rock is just a branch of rock and roll. Rock and roll was defined for a decade by Bruce Springsteen. And he's a image of it the same way Elvis Presley is as King and the Beatles are as the Beatles. They're a band. You can't really break them up into, like, one person. And in a way, you can't break Bruce up either, because the E Street Band has been so fundamental in so much of his best music that you can't ignore them either. So you've got the King and his advisors being people like Scotty Moore and his, you know, the Memphis Mafia and all the people that surrounded the King's entourage. And then you've got the Prince and his wild band of rock and rollers, mainly the E Street Band. And they go together. They just do. And I'll happily debate this with you, but I'm Bruce Springsteen is the crown prince of rock and roll. And like I mentioned at the beginning, Lana Del Rey did a song that mentions Elvis. I mean, it mentions Bruce. It also mentions Elvis. Same way with the Michigan artist Marcel, who does country-ish music, but country rock star. Name drop Springsteen, names drop Blue Suede Shoes. He is just, they go together. And then there's the fun aspects of Bruce wrote a song for Elvis Presley. Sadly, Elvis passed before he could even listen to the demo of Fire. But Fire had been written specifically with Elvis Presley in mind. Also, this is post Born to Run. Bruce Springsteen jumped the fence at Graceland to try and meet Elvis. So if Bruce ever hears this, I 100% believe that you're able to be mentioned in the same sentence as Elvis Presley. Hope that makes your day, sir. But, you know, so he's a huge Elvis fan. When Elvis died, he wrote the song Johnny Bye Bye, which sort of pulls off of a Rolling Stones song, but the lyrics are all about Elvis, and it's made me cry on the way to work. I'm like, Elvis died, like, 15 years before I was born. Why am I crying on the way to work about Elvis Presley? Dang it! Bruce, don't do me like this! So, Elvis and Bruce, hand in hand, the King and the Crown Prince. And that is my take. For those of you who may be, like, having a small thought about, like, well, what about Michael Jackson? Michael Jackson is the King of Pop. I'm not arguing that position. Elvis Presley is the King of Rock and Roll. Bruce Springsteen is the prince of rock and roll. He's also the boss. He has a cool thing. I mean, the boss fits a little bit more than crown prince. I mean, Bruce is Italian. He's got this band behind him. You know, he is the boss, but he's also the crown prince. And so that is my take for the first episode of Springstember. Look forward to more rambles about Bruce this month. In the meantime, y'all have a great week. Be kind to each other. Visit the Instagram, the Facebooks, the Spotify's, and the Apple Podcasts. However you want to get a hold of me. If you think I'm totally wrong, you're free to say so, but I will defend my position. Anyways, See y'all next week for more fun Springsteen, and y'all be good.